I want you to imagine buying this incredibly expensive, state-of-the-art steel safe.
Okay, I'm with you.
You bring it home, you put all your most valuable belongings inside. We're talking your cash, your sensitive documents, basically your entire life.
Right, the really important stuff.
Exactly. And then the manufacturer turns to you and says, by the way, you are never allowed to open this door again. You can only look at your stuff through a tiny bulletproof glass window on the front.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that sounds completely absurd.
It really does. But the crazy thing is, that is exactly what your computer is doing to you right now with, like, some of your most used applications.
Yeah, it's sort of the modern reality of the walled garden, right? I mean, you generate the data, you completely rely on the data, but the software company fundamentally controls how you are allowed to interact with it.
Which brings us perfectly to today's deep dive. We are unpacking this genuinely fascinating technical field guide that was recently published.
Oh, this piece is so good.
It really is. It was written by a developer who simply decided they were done looking through that glass window. The piece is called Full WeChat Automation on macOS.
And it is wild what they managed to pull off.
Seriously, our mission today is to figure out exactly how this developer built a hybrid read and write automation pipeline for an app that, notoriously provides zero public APIs.
Right, zero access for regular users.
Exactly. We're going to explore the actual mechanics of this digital heist, and more importantly, what this rebellious bit of engineering reveals about who really owns the software running on your machine.
Because the methods they use to break out of this ecosystem, I mean, they're brilliant. They reveal some pretty profound, almost inescapable truths about how operating systems actually function beneath that glossy user interface.
Okay, so let's unpack this, because before we get into the wild technical workarounds, like the actual how of the heist, we kind of have to establish the stakes here.
Yeah, the motivation is key.
Right, like why would someone spend hours, maybe days, writing custom code just to hack their own messaging app?
Well, the source material focuses heavily on WeChat, right? And the developer explains that WeChat isn't just an app they use casually. For them, it is the absolute primary communication channel for literally all of their China-side relationships.
Oh, wow. So we're talking like investors, business partners, family, friends, everyone.
Everyone. And that reliance is exactly where the friction starts.
Wow.
Because WeChat is an absolute juggernaut, but for a regular user account, it is notoriously locked down.
Stubbornly closed, basically.
Exactly. If you want to build a custom workflow, you are totally out of luck. I mean, there is no web API to hook into.
Right.
You cannot set up a simple webhook to, say, ping your server when a new message arrives.
Right.
There isn't even a basic native export function to just download your own chat history into a spreadsheet.
That is so frustrating, which directly leads to the developer's three massive pain points, right? First off, they're just drowning in group
Oh,
chats.
yeah, the volume is insane.
They mentioned some of these investor or partner groups generate hundreds of messages a day, and they just wanted a way to search and summarize that noise.
Makes total sense.
Second, they really wanted to pipe those messages directly into an AI workflow, specifically Claude in this case, so the AI could actually analyze the context of the conversations.
Right, giving the AI the actual background.
Exactly. And third, they wanted the holy grail. They wanted to send messages programmatically, not just passive reading, but actively writing back to the app via an AI agent.
And those are incredibly common desires for, well, really any power user trying to manage information overload today. You want to use modern AI tools to sift through the noise, you know.
Totally.
But when the platform outright blocks those tools, you're left with a harsh choice. Do you manually copy and paste hundreds of messages a day, or do you start looking for structural weaknesses in the app itself?
I do have to ask, though, I mean, is it even worth the effort? If an ecosystem is this closed off, why not just move your business partners to Slack or email?
Because in many cases, you simply can't. Yeah, when a platform achieves total market dominance in a specific region or industry, the network effect completely locks you in. You can't just force your investors or your family to switch apps because you want better notification routing,
What do
right?
I see? Yeah, you're stuck where the people are.
Exactly. And that tension right there between an immovable walled garden and a power user who desperately needs automation is the birthplace of almost all great hacker ingenuity.
So, you've hit the wall. You can't just ask WeChat politely for your own data. That leaves basically only one option.
You have to steal it from yourself.
Exactly. But how do you even begin to extract data from a system explicitly designed to keep it hidden?
Well, you start by looking at where the data physically lives.
Yeah.
Even if an app relies heavily on the cloud, A desktop application like WeChat on macOS has to store your recent messages locally on your hard drive just to run efficiently.
Right. It can't download everything from scratch every time you open it.
Exactly. It stores them in standard SQL databases.
Okay. But I'm assuming you can't just, like, double-click that database and read it like a text document.
Oh, definitely not. The developers aren't careless. Those databases are heavily encrypted using an industry-standard extension called SQL Cipher.
Right, of course.
So if you try to open the file directly, it just looks like randomized, unreadable garbage.
Which means we need the key. And, oh my gosh, here is the part of the guide that completely blew my mind.
It's so clever.
The decryption keys for that database don't just live on some remote server in Shenzhen. They actually live inside the WeChat application's active memory while the app is running on your Mac.
And this touches on a really profound, inescapable law of local computing. Think about the mechanics of a screen, right?
Okay.
In order for the WeChat app to display a message to you, it has to transform that encrypted garbage back into readable text. To do that locally, it literally must hold the decryption key in the computer's active memory, or RAM.
Wow.
It's a fundamental functional requirement of just displaying data to a user.
So let me get this straight. The app encrypts the database locally to keep you out, but it fundamentally has to leave the digital key sitting right under the doormat of your computer's memory just to function at all.
That is a perfect analogy. Yes, the key is under the doormat. I mean, it's a massive, highly complex doormat, but if you know where to look, it is right there.
So how do they actually lift the doormat? The guide mentions using a tool that relies on something called LLDB. What is that?
Right. So LLDB is the default debugger in macOS. Usually, a software developer uses a debugger to peek inside the memory of their own program to find out, you know, why it crashed.
Oh, so looking at variables and memory states in real time.
Exactly. But here, the author is essentially weaponizing it. They use a specialized script to attach the debugger to the live running WeChat process.
Whoa.
Yeah, and then they scan gigabytes of active RAM, specifically searching for the hex code patterns that look like SQL Cipher encryption keys.
And it actually finds them. The developer notes that on WeChat version 4.1.x, the tool dumps the keys into a file called keys.json. And apparently it's not just one master key anymore.
Right. The scan generates 24 separate keys.
Wait, 24? Why so many?
Well, modern application security often assigns unique keys to individual database files. So one for contacts, one for messages, one for media, rather than just having a single skeleton key for everything.
Oh, that makes sense. It limits the damage if one key is compromised.
Exactly. But in this case, the script just vacuums up all 24 of them at once.
Unbelievable. So now you have a pocket full of stolen keys. The guide says the next step is feeding those keys into a tool called ChatLogBot, which utilizes something called FastNotify. How does that piece of the puzzle fit in?
So FastNotify is a system-level file watcher. The operating system monitors the hard drive, and FastNotify basically tells it, hey, let me know the microsecond this specific encrypted SQL file changes.
Oh, I love that. So it's literally like a motion sensor for the database.
That's exactly what it is. When a new message arrives from a partner, WeChat updates the local database. The motion sensor trips.
And then what happens?
ChatLogBot wakes up instantly, grabs the correct key from that JSON file, decrypts the database on the fly, extracts the new message, and then formats it cleanly.
Wow.
And then the bot takes that clean data and serves it up as a local HTTP REST API running locally on port 5030.
That is just incredible. They literally built the exact API that the company refused to provide.
Yep, they made it themselves.
Now the developer can just write a standard web request to their own local machine and get back a beautifully structured feed of their entire chat history. The vault is completely bypassed.
It is. But remember, that only solves the read path. Reading's just passive observation.
Right.
To achieve full automation, to actually pipe this into Claude and have Claude manage relationships, you have to be able to write back. You need to send messages programmatically.
And I'm guessing you can't just, like, shove a text string backward into that SQLite database and expect it to magically route through the internet to your investor, right?
No, definitely not. The database is purely for local storage. WeChat servers only accept messages sent through their heavily guarded proprietary network protocols.
I see.
Yeah, if you try to reverse engineer those network packets to send a message under the hood, their security systems will detect the anomaly immediately. They monitor traffic closely for bots.
And I assume they ban you for that.
Oh, yeah. They hand out permanent account bans for that kind of behavior Without hesitation.
Yikes. Okay, so if the back door is heavily alarmed, you have to use the front door. You literally have to go through the user interface.
Exactly. You have to automate the actual graphical interface of the app on macOS, basically making the computer think a human is sitting there typing.
And here is where the architecture gets really wild. The guide explains that the write path relies on something built deeply into macOS called the Accessibility API.
Right, specifically a framework called AXUI Element.
Yes, and the author uses a tool called WeChat MCP. So what is an MCP, and how is it talking to this accessibility layer?
Okay, so MCP stands for Model Context Protocol. It's an emerging open standard that allows AI models like Claude to securely interact with local tools on your computer.
Okay, got it.
So WeChat MCP is essentially the bridge. Claude says, hey, I want to send this summary to the investor group. The MCP tool takes that command and translates it into instructions for the macOS Accessibility API.
And how does the Accessibility API actually execute that? I mean, does it physically look at the screen pixels to find the chat?
Interestingly, no.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to look at pixels at all.
Yeah.
The operating system, a user interface, isn't just a picture. It's a structural tree of interactive objects.
Oh, like a map of all the buttons and text boxes.
Exactly. The API can mathematically navigate that tree. It finds the object labeled search bar, inputs the group name, finds the object labeled message input field, injects the text, and triggers the send action.
That is wild. It's essentially building an invisible robot finger that sits at your desk, visually scans the window, and physically pushes the buttons on your screen.
That is exactly what it's doing.
But wait, animating a user interface like that, isn't that incredibly slow compared to the lightning-fast database reading we just talked about?
It is. It's significantly slower, and the developer is very upfront about this trade-off.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The read path hits the local database in milliseconds, but the write path, the invisible robot finger, has a couple of seconds of latency. Because it takes physical time for the computer to render the UI, select the conversation, simulate the keystrokes, and hit send.
Right, but the upside has to be safety, right?
Massive safety. Because you're using the OS-level accessibility framework, a system literally designed by Apple to help users with physical or visual impairments navigate software, the app cannot distinguish your robot finger from a human using a screen reader or a switch control.
Oh, that is brilliant.
Right. You are interacting with the app exactly as it was intended to be used on the Surface.
Mm-hmm.
So you completely sidestep those protocol-level bans.
That is such a clever duality. You use the memory backdoor to read at the speed of light and the UI front door to write safely.
Best of both worlds.
But, you know, building this Frankenstein system out of memory debuggers and ghost typing sounds incredibly smooth in theory.
In theory, yes.
Right. But the reality, as the author outlined, involves a minefield of 6 specific pitfalls that cost them hours of painful debugging.
Oh yeah, it's the harsh reality of rogue automation. You are duct taping together highly specialized open source tools made by completely different people who never coordinated with each other.
Sounds like a recipe for disaster.
The friction is immense. Just look at the constant cat and mouse game of version changes, for instance.
Right. The author notes that when WeChat updated to version 4.1.x, everything just broke.
Yep.
Older extraction tools were looking for a single master key flag, and suddenly there are 24 keys, and the old scripts just crash completely.
And it was even worse than that. The underlying extraction mechanism fundamentally failed.
Wait, how so?
Well, the ChatLogBot tool originally used an Apple framework called the MockVM API, or VM Map, to read the memory. But after the 4.1.x update, that API basically went completely blind.
Oh.
Yeah. If you ran it, the system just spit back. No memory regions found. The app's memory layout had shifted just enough to completely evade that specific tool.
Wow. Which forced the developer to pivot entirely to that LODB debugger we talked about earlier.
Exactly.
But using LODB opens up its own massive can of worms regarding system environment constraints, right? The guide mentions that LODB requires something called task forbid. What does that actually mean in plain English?
Okay, so it comes down to operating system security.
Yeah.
macOS uses a security model called sandboxing. Yeah. Every app runs in its own isolated little box, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a malicious calculator app can't just wander over and read the memory of your password manager.
Mm-hmm.
To break out of that sandbox and let one process like LDB read the active memory of another process like WeChat, you need a special kernel-level entitlement called task forbid.
Oh, so it's like demanding the master key to the entire hotel rather than just the key to your own room?
That is spot on. And the operating system does not hand out the master key lightly. To use task forbid, you literally must run the script as sudo, meaning you need absolute root administrator privileges on the machine.
And the author points out this makes deployment really restrictive. You can't just toss this script into a lightweight, isolated Docker container on a server somewhere, right?
Nope. It demands direct God-level access to the host machine running the UI.
And even with God-level access, you still have to deal with the configuration mismatches between these open source tools. The author details a completely maddening silent failure caused by a simple file path prefix.
Oh, this part is so painful.
It sounded agonizing. So the extraction tool successfully dumps the keys into the keys.json file. But the extraction tool just lists the raw database names.
Right.
But the bot that actually decrypts the databases expects every file path to begin with the prefix DB's storage.
But the bot doesn't actually tell you that.
No, it doesn't. If you don't manually open the JSON file and literally type DB's storage in front of every single database name, the entire pipeline just silently fails.
This is the worst.
No error message, no warning. The bot just sits there doing nothing, returning empty results.
And silent failures are a developer's absolute worst nightmare because you have zero clues about where the chain broke. And right next to that, they ran into a brutal data type mismatch.
Oh, you mean the SALTS array?
Yes, the SALTS array. The memory scanner pulls out all these decryption keys and formats them as a simple list of strings, right? Like this file path equals this hex key.
Okay.
But at the very end of the JSON file, it includes a special entry called SALTS, which is formatted as an array, a complex list of data.
And the downstream bot, chatlog bot, is rigidly programmed to only accept simple strings.
Exactly. So when the bot hits that array, it completely panics and the whole program crashes.
It's like trying to pour an entire bucket of water into a pipe designed for a single drop. It just backs up and bursts.
That's exactly it.
So you have to manually go into the configuration file and delete the SALTS array before you start the bot.
It perfectly highlights the fragility of this entire ecosystem.
Yeah.
You literally have to act as the manual translator between two different hackers' tools. And honestly, the absolute worst constraint of all.
Let me guess.
These keys expire.
Because they're pulled from active RAM. So if WeChat updates, or if it crashes, or if you just restart your Mac.
Yep. The active memory layout is wiped and rebuilt. The keys you extracted yesterday are now completely useless.
Oh, man.
There is no permanent key you can save. Every single time the app restarts, you have to rerun the root level debugger, extract the 24 new keys, manually add the DB storage prefixes, manually delete the SALTS array, and restart your bots.
Okay. I have to push back here. Root access requirements, manual JSON filtering, silent failures, keys expiring constantly. I mean, this is a total house of cards. Mm-hmm. Who actually has the time or patience to maintain a workflow that is this profoundly fragile on a daily basis?
It's a very fair question, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it misses the fundamental philosophy of undocumented automation.
How so?
Well, yes, it is a house of cards. But you don't build a system like this expecting it to be bulletproof or maintenance-free. You build it expecting it to break.
Oh, I see.
The developer fully understands this reality, which is why they didn't just build the hack. They built resiliency around the hack.
They anticipated the collapse.
Exactly. You document the exact sequence of manual fixes required. You script as much of the recovery as possible. It is just the necessary tax you pay for demanding control over a system that actively fights your control.
It's a high-maintenance sports car, not a reliable daily commuter.
Great way to put it.
But incredibly, despite the sandboxing and the JSON crashes, the author gets the system fully integrated and running, and seeing it in action is wild.
It really is. They tie the whole thing together using Launched, which is macOS's built-in service management framework.
Launched is basically the night watchman of the operating system,
yeah.
Right? Like it just constantly checks to make sure your background scripts are running and restarts them if they mysteriously die.
Precisely. It keeps the ReadPath API and the WritePath MCP server alive in the background all the time.
Oh.
And then the developer wrapped all of these local tools into a single Claude code skill they named WeChat Reader.
So picture the developer's actual morning routine now.
Oh, this is the best part.
Right. They wake up, grab a coffee, and sit down at their computer. And instead of opening the WeChat app and doom scrolling through hundreds of unread messages across a dozen chaotic investor groups,
yeah,
they just open their terminal and ask Claude, hey, summarize what happened in my groups overnight.
And behind the scenes, Claude hits that local port 5030. The chatlog bot instantly pulls the last 200 messages from the decrypted Squillit database, feeds them back to Claude, and the AI presents a clean, beautifully structured summary of the night's events.
It's like magic. And then the developer spots a message from an investor that actually needs a response. But they don't switch windows. They don't open the app.
Yep.
They just tell Claude, hey, tell the lead investor we are reviewing the term sheet today.
And Claude handles it.
Right. Claude routes that command to the WeChat MCP tool. The invisible robot finger wakes up, visually navigates the UI tree, clicks the right chat, types out the message, and hits enter.
It is a fully realized, autonomous, AI-driven workflow layer operating seamlessly on top of an application that was engineered to prevent this exact scenario from ever happening.
It's just brilliant. So stepping back from the code and the debuggers for a second, what is the grand takeaway here? Because this isn't just a cool weekend project for one developer dealing with China-side relationships.
No, the implications are huge.
The author writes something near the end that I really think is the thesis of the whole piece. They say, desktop apps that don't offer APIs aren't actually locked down. The data is on your machine. The UI is accessible through OS-level frameworks.
And that represents a massive paradigm shift in how we view software ownership.
Yeah.
I mean, tech companies have spent a decade conditioning us to believe that they hold the power, right?
Totally.
If they don't explicitly provide an export button, or if they refuse to build an API integration for your favorite tool, we're conditioned to just shrug and say, well, I guess I can't do that.
Yep.
We just accept the boundaries of the walled garden as absolute truth.
But the local operating system is essentially the ultimate skeleton key.
Unquestionably.
Yeah.
If the software is executing on your physical hardware, it ultimately answers to you. Think about it. The operating system has to decrypt the data to show it to you. The operating system has to control the UI elements to let you click on them. Therefore, you, as the root administrator of that operating system, have absolute domain. By combining memory scanners and accessibility tools, this developer proved that there is basically no such thing as a truly closed desktop app.
It is incredibly empowering. It flips the entire dynamic. You stop asking, you know, what will this app allow me to do? And you start asking, what do I want to force this app to do?
Exactly. And as AI agents like Claude become more integrated into our daily lives, the ability to build these local bridges between closed apps and open AI models is going to become a vital skill for power users everywhere.
Which is a really brilliant place to start wrapping up this deep dive.
Yeah, we've covered a lot of ground.
We really have. We've gone from the frustration of an impenetrable messaging app down into the active RAM of a macOS machine, literally stealing 24 encryption keys with a root-level debugger just to read a local database.
It's been quite a journey.
And we've explored how a ghost in the machine uses structural UI trees to physically push buttons and evade network bans. And we've seen how all of this fragile, duct-taped hacking results in this seamless, futuristic morning routine.
It really serves as a potent reminder. The next time you find yourself fighting with a piece of desktop software that refuses to play nice with your workflow, remember that beneath the polished glass window, the raw data is just sitting there.
Just waiting.
Exactly. It is entirely within your reach, provided you're willing to lift the doormat and do a little digging.
But it does leave us with one final kind of unsettling thought to mull over before we go.
Oh, what's that?
Well, we just discussed how OS-level accessibility tools, the exact frameworks engineered by companies like Apple to help visually or physically impaired users interact with their computers, can be weaponized as a backdoor to turn any stubbornly closed app into an AI-driven playground.
Right, the invisible robot finger.
Exactly. So as AI agents get more popular, will future software developers start deploying anti-accessibility countermeasures?
Oh, wow.
Like, will they start intentionally obfuscating their UI trees or blocking accessibility frameworks entirely just to keep AI agents out of their precious walled gardens?
That's a scary thought.
It really is. Because if the tech industry does start locking down those accessibility layers in the name of security, what does that mean for the human users who actually genuinely need those features just to participate in the digital world?
It's a direct collision course between automation and accessibility. And it is absolutely the tension we'll be watching in the years to come.
Definitely something to think about the next time a piece of software tells you no. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us.